Your in-laws may have very different views on how to raise children than what you and your spouse believe, but it's really important to have some confidence and not submit your parental authority to your parents or your in-laws.
When a man and a woman get married, they don't just bring the spouse into the relationship, they also bring in the parents, the in-laws, the siblings, everyone, and it all forms this new extended family you have to figure out how to interact with properly. We're going to talk about that on today's edition of Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network. We're also going to talk about what the church's views are regarding marriage and alternative lifestyles.
It's impossible for a man and a man to bear children, and in that sense, they're not carrying out God's purpose and function in making us the way He made us. And so that's why the Old Testament says, just as Judaism said, and we would say today, therefore there's not a fidelity either to nature or to God's purpose.
Some straight talk about two very important topics. I hope you can stay tuned. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos.
Another general rule of thumb is that when confronting a problem with an in-law, the person whose family is being addressed must be the spokesperson for the couple to their own family.
Well, we're not going to pull any punches today. Did you catch that firm language? Must be the spokesperson for the couple. That's Dr. Randa Anderson, and she is our first guest on today's broadcast. Welcome again to the program. We're a weekly outreach from the Orthodox Christian Network. Our website is myocn.net. That's myocn.net, and I encourage you to go there. We are just one part of that vast international network of ministries, and you will find them all on the website. I'll talk a bit more about some of the specific things you'll find when you go there as we move on into the program. But first, let's hear what Dr. Anderson and our host, Father Chris, have to say. Dr. Anderson is a licensed clinical psychologist who specializes in relationship conflicts, and she's here with us to talk about in-laws.
Great to have you back on the program, Randa.
Thanks for having me back, Father.
I've heard it said that you don't just marry a person, that you also marry their family. Do you think that's true?
Oh, absolutely. Our relationships don't exist in a vacuum, and your spouse comes as a package deal. The individuals in his or her family become your relatives, too.
Mm-hmm.
But also, because of the way your spouse was raised, that influence how he or she is today. You're also marrying your spouse's family traditions, mm-hmm. cultural and religious customs, and probably even child-rearing practices.
Well, let's talk about setting some boundaries, because I'm sure that there are many families out there that maybe they wish, well, their kids may have married somebody else because they don't really get along with the in-laws. Mm-hmm. So let's kind of talk about that whole thing and crack it open. How do we set good boundaries for these relationships right from the start?
Well, I like the question because it's pointing out that, in fact, you do need to set those boundaries right from the start. And I think the first thing to remember is that we're commanded, God has commanded you as a newlywed couple to leave your parents and join with your spouse in creating a new family, right? This comes from Genesis, often quoted, "For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh." I find it really interesting that from the start of creation, we are told to set boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you maybe have heard the expression, you have to leave and cleave. And I think that's where some couples run into trouble. They forget that, or they have trouble doing that, or their parents have trouble with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think practically speaking, a couple can, from the get-go, set boundaries by being clear and direct with their parents that they love and honor them, but they do need some separation and privacy in order to form their own household.
Now, do we talk to our parents? Do we talk to our siblings? Do we talk to our kids about the differences that we may have with in-laws? I mean, is that a wise thing to wear those things on your shirt sleeve?
Well, I guess it depends on the situation. I think If our family of origin is our support system, you know, there's nothing wrong with going to them. However, you do have to be careful because, mm-hmm. you know, if you say talk to your own mother about your mother-in-law, you might be feeding the fire of competition between the two.
I see.
You know, again, depending on how they get along.
Yes, yes, yes.
That may or may not be a good thing. And also, I think you have to remember that first and foremost, you should go to your spouse if you're having a problem. But that's really who in your marriage, you know, that is who you should be talking to.
Well, I know many times I hear parents saying, you know, I'm really biting my lip on this issue. I don't want to speak, but I know I should be speaking because either my kid is being taken advantage of or my daughter or my son. And there's sort of this back and forth. And then your in-laws are driving me crazy. And why did you marry that person? I mean, there are times just when they don't gel. Families just do not gel together. You wonder how people fall in love when the families don't gel. But anyway, how can we love the people that are our in-laws that we just don't like?
Right, right. It's a good question because sometimes, you know, our in-laws are not the people that we would choose as our, you know, best friends. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have to remember that love is a decision and that you can make a conscious effort to love your in-laws, even if they aren't the people that you would choose, you know, to hang out with on a Friday night. And some ways to do this include, first of all, focusing on the positive. What are the traits about your in-laws that you do value and do like? You know, those are the things to focus on when you're interacting with them. I also think that you can be proactive and try to find common interests and pursue these with your in-laws. You know, rather than focusing on the differences, look for the commonalities. But then at the same time, remember that you don't have to be alike in order to like each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can appreciate differences as opportunities for new experiences. Your spouse's family is going to bring a whole wealth of new experiences to your life. And if you look at it as enriching instead of annoying, mm-hmm. you know, you'll be a lot happier. And I think accepting your in-laws for who they are and being realistic about your expectations of them is also very important. So, you know, you don't assume that they're going to do everything the way you do that things and, you know, adjust your expectations accordingly.
Well, I mean, lest our listeners feel that we're all down on relationships here, you know, there are many in-laws that do get along famously.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they have wonderful, wonderful compatibility. And that compatibility, of course, leads to growth. But we're talking about the situations that are difficult. So how do we handle, let's go to those conflicts. How do we handle the conflicts that arise with our in-laws?
Well, let's talk about a few general rules of thumb. First of all, in dealing with a conflict with your in-laws, take a deep breath and remember that you are all on the same team. And I think so many conflicts worsen within families and within marriages when the relationship turns adversarial and it becomes an us versus them kind of situation. And when the sense of camaraderie is lost. But you are all on the same family team, and it's best to approach conflicts with an attitude of wanting to resolve a problem in the spirit of compromise rather than with the hope of winning another battle. So it starts with your attitude and remembering, again, that you're all on the same team. Another general rule of thumb is that when confronting a problem with an in-law, the person whose family is being addressed must be the spokesperson for the couple, to their own family. So the son must speak directly to his own mother on behalf of his wife.
That's good.
Really important not to allow your spouse to become the bad guy within your own family. That will cause discord within your family of origin, and at the same time, for sure, within your own marriage. Before your spouse can be the spokesperson to his or her own family, it requires that you and your spouse get on the same page first, whatever the conflict is. So it's important that you and your spouse strengthen your marriage, talk about the problems, agree on how you want to handle it, and then move forward in dealing with your in-laws.
Okay. sources of conflict, and we know what those are. They usually are how we raise the children and where we spend the holidays. Those are usually the ones. When you were a child, this is how I raised you. And why did you go there for Christmas and you didn't come to me and you went to them two Christmases in a row?
Everyone's blah, blah, blah.
Oh, boy, those are sources of conflict. How do we deal with those?
Okay, well, how to raise children, you know, this issue goes back to setting boundaries and understanding that, and accepting that you're commanded by God to establish your own new family. So your in-laws may have very different views on how to raise children than what you and your spouse believe, especially I think it comes up regarding discipline or what types of activities your kids get involved in. But it's really important to have some confidence and not submit your parental authority to your parents or your in-laws. Listen to them, take their advice if it makes sense to you, but have some confidence, remember you're your own family, and do what you think is right in the eyes of God for your children.
Let me ask you only two more questions.
Okay.
The basic things we should avoid, Randa.
Okay. Well, I can give you some tips from both the perspective of being the parent-in-law and the perspective of being the son and daughter-in-law, because I think it goes both ways. There are things that each need to do in respecting their relationship with the other.
Okay, I've got my pen out. I'm going to write these
right
down. All right,
I got a list for you.
All right, go ahead.
All right, well, I think in terms of the in-law parents, it's important not to give unsolicited advice. Let your kids figure it out. If they ask you, give your opinion and then step aside without lecturing or sermonizing. Trust yourself that you raised them well and that they're capable of solving their own problems. I think it's also important that you not ask personal questions. The couple needs privacy and they will share if they so choose. If the couple does share with you, be sure to keep their confidence and do not talk with others about their personal concerns. In terms of improving your relationship, this is not a negative, this is a positive, take a genuine interest in your son or daughter-in-law and try to relate to them in a meaningful way. Be proactive in trying to grow the relationship. And lastly, I would say for the parent-in-laws, give the couple enough space to develop and establish their own traditions and live their own lives. There was a great child psychologist by the name of Erna Furman who wrote an often quoted article in which she quotes Anna Freud, who said, "A mother's job is to be there to be left."
To be there to be left.
Right. In other words, the mother needs to be emotionally strong enough to allow her child independence to leave.
I got you.
Knowing that the child will come back in a loving way, but without imparting guilt or anger at the child for leaving.
And what do we say, finally, Randa, to those people that might be having, that currently having problems with their in-laws? What's a good first step for them to take?
Well, I go back to the reality check. I'm very big on self-examination. I think you have to reflect on your own behavior first, and be honest about how you may be contributing to the conflict. And then change your own behavior, because that's what you have control over. You don't have control over the other person. And then additionally, try to see the problem from your in-law's point of view. What might he or she be experiencing? I think when we look through the other person's glasses, you know, it provides an opportunity to be more compassionate and for your anger to be diffused.
Thank you, Randa. Thank you very much. And one thing I wrote down from the beginning when we spoke was, remember that love is a decision. I think that should guide all of these discussions.
Exactly.
Thanks, Randa.
Thank you.
Father Chris mentioned a few minutes ago that he had his pen out and his paper, and he was taking notes as Randa was speaking. How about you? Did you catch all that she had to say? There's a lot of meat there. If you'd like to listen to it again, go to our website at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. Click on that CRTL link on the top of the page. There's also a link in the top right-hand corner, a Donate Now link. That will open up a number of opportunities for you to become a Share the Light partner, an outreach partner with this ministry. Help us do all that we do. There are internet radio stations that reach around the world through the OCN network. You will find the Soundings blog with over 25 contributors updating the material on a daily basis. What a great place to go if you have a question about this specific topic. That's the blog link on the homepage, and much, much more. Just go to myocn.net and you will see exactly what I'm talking about. And do consider becoming a financial partner with us. We're a nonprofit outreach and depend upon your partnership. And now with our feature conversation for this week, here again is our host, Father Chris, speaking with Father Brendan Pelfrey, who is the pastor of St. George Greek Orthodox Church in Shreveport, Louisiana.
The month of June, we're speaking about marriage, and we're also speaking about alternative relationships, which opens up a whole can of worms. But let's start with marriage. What is marriage in your definition, Father Brendan?
Well, I would take mine, you know, from the church, and in our church's understanding, marriage is when a man and a woman unite and intend to have a family. They become spiritually one, and they then intend, if they can, to raise children. In other words, it's not just a sexual relationship for self-pleasure. It has to do with the establishment of family and maintaining the human race in a sacred way.
Now, for some people today, we hear, well, we don't really need to get married, Father. I mean, we can come to the church and, you know, it's like putting on a new set of earrings. What's the purpose of coming to church? Because we love each other. We can live together as partners. We're just people, two people who care for each other. How do we deal with that, Father?
Well, that's a good question. And of course, it's such a trend that, I mean, I think many priests and pastors know that they see almost no one who hasn't had, lived together before they're getting married. It's a trend in our country today, in our civilization. But I would say this, you know, people say, well, is marriage outside the church necessary? Is it really a marriage? And that's the wrong kind of question. Mm-hmm. That's like asking, did Romans drink wine? Can they drink wine? I mean, we have wine and communion. What's the difference? There's a huge difference. I mean, one is sacramental, one is not. Wine can be for drunkenness, or it can be for the blood of Christ. So there's, in the church, what we see as sacramental relationship that's blessed in God, and it's a relationship of fidelity, whereas I think what we're seeing in our culture is a relationship of self-pleasure and convenience.
Okay.
And that's a very different thing. And anybody who has children, by the way, knows that that's not convenient.
Boy, that's true. Well, let me ask you this, I mean, right out there. Why marry? Why marry in the church?
Well, I think, I mean, what I say, and I imagine what most of our priests say when a couple shows up, or when they're living together and they don't show up, I mean, even non-Orthodox people, I say to them, you know, there's a sense in which you are married, of course. Mm-hmm. You're having sex. Maybe you have children. But the relationship in the church is entirely different. And here, you know, I think about some of the early church fathers. The one that comes to my mind is Clement. He's talking about how in the church, your relationship is a spiritual relationship. And you do things together. Tertullian said that, too. You pray together. You become truly one. You together perform the fasts, and you teach one another and exhort one another, and you trust one another, and you have a fidelity. Now, what we see outside the sacrament in the culture is very, very different, and it's often been like that in the past. Even the Romans were pretty prudish. They had sort of a serial polygamy, you know, you could get divorced and marry your daughter or God knows what. And we're seeing that today. People live together, but they don't, I don't think, have an understanding of intimacy and fidelity and sacrament. And so it's simply a different life, that's all. So I tell them, well, sure, in a sense you're already married, but it's not the same. Just like, sure, that's wine, but that's not sacramental wine. And so, by the way, tomorrow's my wife and I have our 44th anniversary, but we would say that marriage in the church doesn't mean that you're both perfect, and it doesn't mean that you're not going to have stress and trial, but it means your way of dealing with those things is very, very different than it is outside of the church.
Okay. Let me ask you this question then. All right, so we have a person who doesn't marry in the church. What does the Orthodox Church say about that marriage? I mean, it happened in history throughout the times. They were Roman marriages. They were tribal marriages. I mean, how does the Orthodox Church parse through that?
Well, I think we always said that we'd like to bring them into the church and bless that relationship and see it become sacramental. And, you know, I've heard some people talk about, well, is their marriage valid? The idea of a valid marriage, okay, if I don't want to insult anyone, but I think that's very Western. It was a sort of a Roman and then later Roman Catholic idea about legalism. We're not looking at it in terms of validity. We're looking at it in terms of what sort of relationship a couple had. And over and over and over again, I've seen situations where couples even divorced, maybe remarried, and then divorced, and then now they've suddenly come into the church. Well, what we're saying is God can overcome any form of broken relationships and sin, and he does. So if you want to come in and have that relationship now become a sacramental one and bless it, we're overjoyed to do that. As for other people, like should the state marry these people or not marry these people, I don't think the church ever tried to be the state because the state right. doesn't have sacraments.
No, it was a separate issue. But the problem is, you know, people live in the world. We're supposed to live in the world but be not of the world. But the reality is the tidal wave is moving towards, you want to get married in the church? What?
Right, that's true. And one of the things we encounter in counseling with couples is a fear about commitment. And you see, if you do away with marriage, even in the statutes, which I think may be coming soon, even in our country, as you do away with marriage, a lot of things break apart and suffer. But one of those is that there's not much fidelity. And, of course, we already see that among people of all different religious backgrounds, where there's less and less and less fidelity. And it's occurring also in the Orthodox Church. But then we're admonished to try to bring people back together through the forgiving and gracious love of God. And I thank God that quite often that happens.
It's amazing how wonderful things go when we are connected to God. Not that they're going to be perfect, not that they're going to be right. not going to be struggles, but it's amazing the strength that we can bring to bear on these issues when we are connected to God.
That's right.
You know, in this series that we're covering this month on marriage, we ask, of course, our listeners to go to our website at myocn.net and also to our Facebook and Twitter page to interact with us. And because we're speaking about marriage, we're touching some real hot-button issues this month. These programs are offered out of mercy and not out of judgment. We're bringing here a loving God's mercy to bear upon these issues and not his judgment. So
that is the Orthodox way. That's
exactly.
always been the way of the church, as far as I can tell.
So let's talk a minute. Let's go to the next level here. I mean, there are many, and we've talked about it, non-Orthodox marriages between a man and a woman that would not be considered valid according to our canons. I mean, people that marry, for example, their fourth cousin.
Right.
Or marriages between a Christian and a non-Christian, someone who is not baptized in the name
right.
of the Holy Trinity.
Right.
The issue, of course, now that is big, is the same-sex issues, that people
right.
who are of the same sex deserve more of a concern than others, for example. What do you think about that, Father Brendan?
Well, that's a tough question. It's a good question. Nobody deserves less concern from God than anybody else. I would start with that. And I would point out that all through the history of the churches, all through time, there have been people that had same-sex relationships. Now, how did the church look at it? In fact, long before that, how did Scripture look at it all through the Old Testament? And very easily seen is that God created Adam to have one wife, and he made woman for that very purpose. And then one thing that I always look at is that it says, and Adam knew Hawa, Eve, his wife, and the word there is yada, and it means to know, but it also means to have high regard for and to care for, and it's an intimate knowing that is not just a sexual relationship. Today we talk about carnal knowledge, but it's not. It's a God-blessed relationship so that there can be children and families. Now, if we cast this whole thing not in terms of shouldn't you feel for those people as much as for heterosexuals? Yes, of course. But let's look at it in another term, and that's in terms of fidelity. If I say fidelity, I can mean by that fidelity to two people. Mm-hmm. It's always good to see fidelity, like deep friendships. And of course, that kind of fidelity can even exist among homosexuals, although I think in the gay lifestyle it's very difficult to find.
Well, that's what I was going to say, excuse me for interrupting you, that
sure.
There, of course, is the person who is a homosexual, bisexual, whatever, and right. They're saying that, you know, I can have love for someone, I can have respect, I can have commitment for them, so why are you cheating me? Why are you not allowing me? Why is God not loving me? Why is not God allowing me? On and on and on. So how do we address those issues?
When people say that, it's mostly untrue. I worked intensely just with gay people, both sexes, and one thing that they taught me over the years is that actually when most people say that, like, I can have this kind of relationship, you know, you may want to answer, I'm sure you may, that maybe you could, but do you? And most of the time the answer is no, not really. But setting that aside, that has to do with other things, you know, like cruising and all that. I'm not interested in that. What I want to talk about is there are two other levels of fidelity.
Okay.
There's fidelity to nature itself and fidelity to God. And here the church has always said, as the Jews said before that, that the problem with homosexual relationships is that they are not faithful to nature itself. In other words, we're not created for that relationship. But although we are created with the knowledge that there should be fidelity, I would say, like, any high school kid knows that if his girlfriend dumps him, he's sad because he wanted some fidelity. Or when your friend, your close friend, suddenly turns on you. So we know that in creation, we're meant to have fidelity. But now, what about fidelity in our physiology? Well, it requires a man and woman sort of polarity to have offspring. And we even see that polarity, oddly enough, you see it in the level of microbiology, you see it in physics, mm-hmm. in everything. So God made male and female, just like he made positive and negative. Now, what happens then is it's impossible for a man and a man to bear children. And in that sense, they're not carrying out God's purpose and function in making us the way he made us. And so that's why the Old Testament says, just as Judaism said, and we would say today, that therefore there's not a fidelity either to nature or to God's purpose. Now, does that mean that you're cursed and worse than everybody else? I don't think it necessarily means that. For one thing, I note that, you know, this may be a surprise to some people, but if you read the Desert Fathers, I love the Desert Fathers and Mothers in the desert tradition. Now and then we come across a reference that indicates that somebody had been in homosexual relationships and left it, went out to the desert, became monastic. And we know that because of what they created as their way of life. They didn't allow young boys or girls to come to the monasteries. Some of them say that they fled the bars of Alexandria. Hmm. So why did they do that? Because they wanted a pure life. They wanted to stop what they were doing and not live according to lust.
Could it also be, Father Brendan, that we have reached a point in our world today where our desire for a compassionate, loving person to be with us, someone who has mercy and love and cares for us, has become so great, and we need it so much that we've lost that ability to see God, and therefore we're searching it out in anything and everyone we can find, which creates all these issues?
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. And, you know, as I said, I've spent some years, in fact, I worked exclusively with homosexual people under a bishop once for a year in one of the cities that has the highest gay concentration in America. And so I met hundreds and hundreds of people that I knew very, very well and visited in my home and stayed with us and all of that. And one thing that over and over they would tell me is don't believe the lie that it's happy to do all this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the things we're doing, we're not happy doing. We feel rejected, and we may have felt that in our upbringing. Now, you see, that can work for both homosexual and heterosexual people, or bisexual, or sexually confused people, that I didn't have a stable family, but my father and mother didn't have this loving relationship that blesses children. Maybe they were demanding, strident, punishing. Maybe they hated each other. They didn't want children. All those kind of things that are wrong because they're not the joy of the Lord. They're not the way we're meant to be.
Well, what we're trying to do this month on OCN with our special on marriage is to raise that banner of solid, good, blessed Christian marriage, and to let folks that are married know that the church is with them. Those who are searching to find their spouse, the church is with you. Those who are struggling to find that spouse and know that somehow, some way, they have questions in their mind, the church is with you.
And those who choose monastic life, the church is with them, and they're not better. In fact, some of the early fathers say that marriage is a harder path to take, and therefore it's honorable. Monasticism is extremely difficult.
Yes, it is.
Is honorable as well, but we don't elevate one over the other.
No. Father Brendan, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. I really enjoyed this.
Again, that's Father Brendan Pelfrey, who is the pastor of St. George Greek Orthodox Church in Shreveport, Louisiana. He's been with us a number of times in the past, and we look forward to his next visit. This is Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network. Remember that you can listen again to these conversations by going to myocn.net and click on the CRTL link. That's myocn.net. And consider how you might become involved with us financially. We have a number of opportunities for that. Just click on the Donate Now button when you go to our homepage. Do join us next week at this same time for another edition of our broadcast. And remember to always have faith in what you listen to.